towering icy cliffs with peaks like pointed turrets sit in water beneath a night sky with an aurora above. Green letters appear, Disney Nature. Words appear. Life depends on little things we take for granted. A drifting view in a forest shows streams of water cascading down the rocky face of a looming waterfall.
In the countless landscapes of life on Earth, things are not always what they seem.
A blurry view of a tiny bird sharpens into focus.
What appears fragile may be fierce.
Boasting a long pointed beak, the bird hovers in the air, its wings flapping in slow motion.
What appears innocent may be calculating.
A passion flower blooms. Inside, the purple-tipped corona radiates outward in a circle. Red-tipped filaments on a leaf surface close inward, trapping a fly.
Clever illusion is more than a means of survival.
Two butterflies stand close.
It's also a story of love.
A green honeycreeper bird perches on a twig, and an arrow-poisoned frog pulsates its chest.
And of the mysterious force relentlessly driving all living things to reproduce themselves.
A howler monkey and its baby look down from a branch.
By any means necessary, including deception.
A violet-petaled flower and a red orchid bloom. A view sinks down through the thick canopy of the forest into its dense interior. Vividly colored butterflies flutter about.
I live in forests like this. But then I live almost everywhere.
Our view continues down through the lush undergrowth of young trees, then shrubs, to the forest floor.
This tropical forest appears still, but everywhere living things are following the mute commands of their genes to find mates and to ensure that their species lives on.
A yellow-billed toucan cocks its head, while a white-faced capuchin monkey brushes its hands together. An orange-chested motmot bird flies from its perch. Elsewhere, a serene-faced two-toed sloth hangs upside down from a branch.
One might imagine that the most important life forms are large, or fleshy, or smart.
A scarlet macaw parts its beak, a monkey peers down from a tree, and a butterfly sucks nectar from a flower.
But it is love among the little things that actually runs the vast machinery of life.
Flying green insects hover close to a yellow orchid, while a red ant breaks off a portion of a leaf.
Some of the most important events on Earth occur quietly, in small and hidden worlds.
Several red ants carry away fragments of a green leaf. A slow-motion view shows white water plunging down the craggy face of a waterfall.
And some species, critical to the grand scheme of life, are not what you expect.
Butterflies with indigo wings flutter past.
This is a story about one of the most vital and ingenious of all living things.
An insect buzzes around a cluster of red conical flowers.
It's my story.
A time-lapse view shows a pink orchid blooming.
I'm a flower.
Elsewhere, a yellow orchid with red flecks opens its smooth, waxy-looking petals. A cluster of yellow anthers waves at the center of a purple flower.
I'm going to tell you, on behalf of all flowers, about life, from our point of view. You think we're just fragile wisps of beauty, unaware that beauty is our strategy. We're more important than you know. We've helped life prosper across the ages. Without us, humans might not survive.
As a midnight blue butterfly sweeps past pink flowers, a title appears, Wings of Life. another butterfly takes off from a stump, flapping bright sky blue wings with dark edges.
Beauty is not always what it seems. Beauty can be a tool of survival and seduction.
A few more blue butterflies with dark borders flit through the forest. One passes a cluster of reeds, offering a glimpse of its black, brown, and yellow underside.
Every beat of every wing in every forest is somehow keeping the great enterprise of life streaming forward.
It banks gracefully in a sharp turn. Later, it swoops over the cascading waterfall.
The constant motion of life makes love connections possible.
A view looks down at water flowing down the steep, jagged rock face. Elsewhere, a view roves past the moss-covered, tangled roots of a large tree.
Animals with wings and legs can search for mates. But we plants are forever rooted in one place. So we entice animals to us by offering rewards. When they come, we use them to make the love connections we can't make ourselves.
A tiny insect flies through the forest.
In this forest in Panama, a tropical orchid bee has picked up an alluring scent, and he's searching for the source. It's me, an orchid, and I'm one of the most cunning of all flowers. My perfume is a trick.
A closed yellow orchid unfurls its gorgeous petals. As insects crawl on its surface, a clear liquid drops from its center to the pitcher-like bottom half.
The orchid bee depends on me for help with his central mission in life, to mate with a female.
An orchid bee with a shiny green abdomen striped with slim black bands flies away from a cluster of flowers. He pauses in front of a yellow orchid hanging from its stem off a tree.
For weeks, he collects scent oils from orchids. Eventually, he uses his mix of fragrances as a kind of orchid cologne to attract a female. The scents come from me, a bucket orchid. The bucket is part of my trick.
A bee moves in close to the pitcher-like bottom half, its legs kicking. It hesitates, peering through large compound eyes, then touches down on a petal.
The bee has to climb a waxy slope to reach the scent oils cleverly hidden beneath a hood.
Three bees now sit on the smooth yellow flower. A droplet of liquid drips into its bucket. A bee climbs up into the orchid's hood, then falls into the bucket's puddle of fluid.
I've filled my bucket with a sticky fluid that makes the bee sink.
Two smaller insects float motionless in the fluid near the struggling bee. The two other bees hover close by. The bee tries to climb up the slippery wall, but falters, its motions growing sluggish. Several bees hover cautiously outside. One ventures close to the bucket. Inside, the struggling bee gives off tiny bubbles of air.
I provide only one escape route, which leads him just where I want him.
He crawls to a narrow gap. The now glistening bee slowly climbs into the gap, fighting his way upward with its wings folded close to his back. Outside the flower, the bee's antennae and front legs slowly rise into view. His head emerges from the flower, offering a close view of his silvery mouth and tiny black hair sticking up from the top of his head. Nearly freed, the bee rests, clinging to the flower.
After the bee climbs out, I grip him tightly. I glue two pollen sacks to his back, each filled with tens of thousands of pollen grains. These are the only pollen sacks I will ever produce, so I won't let him go until the glue is dry.
the bee struggles futilely against the orchid's stubborn grip.
I may wait an hour or more before loosening my grip.
The orchid releases the bee.
This one bee now carries my legacy.
It flies away, ferrying pollen sacks on its back.
When he comes upon the scent of another orchid that same day, he heads right for it. If he slips into the bucket of this second orchid, the pollen sacks on his back will come unglued. Pollination can occur. A new orchid generation can begin. How nature has created such intricate strategies is a mystery of life. Yet we can unravel some of the puzzle if we go back in time.
An iguana rests in the forest.
Back nearly 200 million years, during the age of reptiles, there were no mammals larger than a mouse. For a very long time, there were no flowers either.
Sporting a black striped tail, the lizard crawls along a branch.
Without flowers, Earth was a drab place.
Now mist fills the forest air. An aerial view soars through clouds toward a jagged mountaintop.
But about 135 million years ago, life began to change dramatically because of an invention.
A time-lapse view shows shifting rays of sunlight sweeping over tree trunks in a forest.
When dinosaurs roamed forests like this, most plants spread their pollen on the wind.
Gusts of wind blow against pine branches, sending clouds of pollen flying from clusters of small, amber-hued male cones nestled at their tips.
If they were lucky, a few pollen grains would reach another tree, creating seeds that would become the next generation.
A more commonly known female pine cone opens. A tiny green shoot with several tendrils sprouts from the soil, shedding its seed hull. Now water glistens in the sun.
It still works today for pines, grasses, and many other plants.
Opened female pine cones lie scattered on the bank.
But it's not very efficient. Most of the pollen goes to waste.
Masses of pale yellow pollen lie near the pine cones and float at the water's edge.
Some unknown plant in the deep past, perhaps a magnolia ancestor, produced a device that would ensure delivery of pollen directly to a mate. It would prove to be one of the most important events in the history of life. The device was me, a flower.
Insects perch on the curled yellow anthers of a magnolia flower.
Our blossoms act like advertising billboards. Our perfumes and tasty rewards lure passing creatures to us. And we load them up with pollen they will unknowingly carry to other flowers.
A winged insect flies away.
Beetles were among our first love messengers.
Different beetles crawl over a variety of vibrantly colored flowers, their feet stepping delicately over the petals and anthers.
Our fruit, seeds, nectar, and pollen became crucial foods for millions of species. We flourished and became a keystone life form. Today, our pollination schemes knit together the fabric of life across the planet.
A view drifts over a sea of orange and yellow flowers in a field. A pink lily with orange anthers opens its petals.
Over time, our pollination tactics evolved.
A shiny black insect lands on a stalk of lavender-hued buds. The filaments of a blooming pink flower dance in the wind.
Pollinators adapted in turn. And life everywhere became infinitely more diverse.
A plump caterpillar with black and orange spots and spiky blue spiracles crawls along a branch. Two bright green parakeets soar.
There's an example in this rainforest.
Curled orange filaments of a flower unfurl and straighten outward.
Some of us began hiding our nectar in tubes.
Long pollen-tipped anthers emerge from a cluster of tube-shaped buds.
It encouraged some pollinators to specialize, developing mutually beneficial relationships.
A green and blue hummingbird hovers in front of a yellow and orange cluster of pistil-like tubes. In slow motion, the hummingbird inserts its long, slim beak into one of the tubes, flapping its wings to hover in place. The hummingbird withdraws its beak, hovers momentarily above the flower, then flies over to a small cluster of tiny purple flowers on a stalk. A brown hummingbird flies among red and orange flowers.
One of these pollinators evolved a longer beak for nectar tubes.
The brown hummingbird hovers in slow motion. The view shifts to normal speed as it darts to a flower and drinks.
And wings that can beat up to 200 times a second.
A green hummingbird's wings move in a blur as it drinks nectar. The birds flit from one flower to another. In slow motion, one gracefully swoops to a red flower. It hovers facing the blossom, its feet tucked close to its belly.
With these unique aerobatic skills, hummingbirds can hover to feed and maneuver like airborne dancers.
The hummingbird catches sight of a bug and flies after it in a twirling spiral. It pauses, hovering amid vivid red flowers as it gazes after the bee. A blue-bellied hummingbird moves tummy first through the air, its head up and its tail down. One with a creamy white underbelly appears to sway mid-air. An olive-green hummingbird with a sweeping orange crest sips from a cluster of tiny purple flowers. The brown hummingbird with the long curved beak faces a vibrant red blossom. The white-bellied bird lifts its head. The blue-bellied bird sways its tail.
Now, after millions of years, pollination partnerships occur almost everywhere. In luxurious habitats like the rainforest, but also in some of the harshest places on Earth.
An aerial view glides over an arid landscape of rocky hills under a clear, bright blue sky.
The Sonoran Desert of northern Mexico is a world of blistering heat.
The view roves past a bare, jagged peak.
I live here, too.
Birds circle the crest of the peak. Another view glides above the craggy top of a wall-like mountain to find a blue sea stretching beyond distant plains with an island in the distance. Tall cactus plants resembling green columns stand tall in a cluster beneath the cloudless sky. Deep ridges run down the length of their trunks.
We cacti are flowering plants central to life in this arid world.
Short, bud-like outgrowths punctuate the ridges on the cacti trunks, particularly near their tops.
Living as long as 150 years, we help feed generation after generation of desert creatures.
Four birds perch atop a cluster of cacti. One takes flight.
We are living water tanks. That's how we survive. But to reproduce, we form alliances with unusual partners.
A low, sweeping view scans the base of the plants.
In this harsh realm, our strategy is not to deceive, but to nurture.
As the sun sets, a small bud-like growth on a cactus trunk blooms into a tube-shaped flower with delicate white petals at its rim.
When pollinated, we cactus flowers turn into fruit with seeds to start a new generation.
A view sweeps up a cactus trunk, offering a closer look at the fuzzy, rusted-hued growths protruding near the top. One bud opens its white petals to reveal a bright yellow center.
So, on summer nights, to attract pollinators, we open a few nectar-filled flowers, and we wait.
More cactus flowers bloom. A nighttime view glides over sand dunes, overlooking the dark sea.
Elsewhere in the night, our pollinators wait too. When the time is right, they will leave their home on an island in the Sea of Cortez to search for the white flowers beckoning from the desert.
Under the glow of a round moon, clear liquid drips from the cactus flower petals. A time-lapse view shows the full moon drifting through the sky. Our hazy view of a flying shape comes to focus, revealing a tiny bat flapping its thin translucent wings in slow motion. It dips its tongue into a flower, then flies up to another, thrusting its head inside.
These nectar-feeding bats are all female. They live apart from males while pregnant. Most are due to give birth soon. Some are already nursing. They desperately need nourishment.
A swarm of bats arrives and start feeding on the nectar-rich cacti flowers. They cling to the flowers with tiny feet. A close view shows a bat working its pink tongue as she drinks. Another bat hangs upside down from a flower, licking her chops.
Pollen sticking to their faces rubs off and pollinates the flower of the next cactus.
A plump bat lands on a flower, furiously pumping her wings as she drinks. A baby bat holds onto its mother's abdomen as she sucks nectar from a flower.
A new mother gulps nectar so she can nurse a baby born only moments ago.
As the mother flies off with her baby, our view lingers on the white blossom.
Each flower opens on only one night, its sole opportunity to spread its pollen across the desert on wings. In billions of these brief intersections of the animal and plant worlds, life regenerates itself over and over again.
A round-bellied bat plunges her head into a flower as another drinks nearby, then flies away. In slow motion, a bat flaps her thin membranous wings as she drinks. Withdrawing, she flies away. Another bat hovers nearby, waiting patiently. As the flower is deserted, she swoops in to take her share. Drops of clear nectar fall from her mouth as she lifts her head from the flower and flies away. A view from inside the flower shows a bat burrowing its head inside in search of nutrition. In slow motion, a bat arrives at a flower to drink, her grayish-brown and pink body nearly matching the colors of the flower's exterior. Light shines through her paper-thin wings as she feeds. She hovers with her legs straight back, offering a glimpse of her round belly. She withdraws with her tongue sticking out, then flies away.
If the flowers were pollinated and fertilized, they will become nourishing fruit. A wait begins among hungry creatures for the next gifts of the cacti.
As our view revolves around a clump of cacti, the star-speckled sky grows pale blue, then brightens with the break of day.
A waiting game has also begun among very different flowers in a very different world.
An aerial view glides over lush green fields.
The farm fields of the American Midwest.
Beyond a thicket of trees, a silo stands amid a cluster of humble buildings.
I live here, too. I'm a kind of wildflower growing near the crops.
A view sweeps over a meadow of tall grass.
Each spring, I wait for a pollinator to sweep in from far away. I thrive across North America, but I'm considered a weed. Milkweed, people call me, because of my special sap.
Tiny orange insect larvae squirm along the edges of a milkweed flower's pale pink petals. A line of thick white liquid runs down a stem.
I make a milky poison that can sicken many animals that might feed on me. But I also produce sweet nectar that draws a kind of beautiful pollinator from a hidden retreat more than 1,000 miles away.
A beaten path cuts through the green field, winding into a cluster of verdant trees in the distance. Now stars twinkle in a night sky. In large hive-shaped clusters, countless butterflies hang with their wings completely at rest.
In a forest on a mountain in central Mexico, monarch butterflies are amassed by the tens of millions, waiting for the rising sun to energize their bodies.
A few butterflies stir and begin to fly off. Many more follow suit. Rays of the rising sun bathe the slumbering butterflies. Brighter sunlight shines on the open black and orange wings of awakened monarchs.
In clusters so dense, they can bend the trees. They rest and prepare themselves for the long journey northward to reach the milkweed.
Hundreds of butterflies hang in a column. Countless monarchs cover a cluster of trees.
Every autumn, to avoid freezing in the north, they fly here from as far away as Canada and perch in fir trees at an elevation of more than 11,000 feet. It's the perfect climate to help them conserve energy through the winter.
As countless black and orange butterflies rest on the trees, a few flutter around over the mass.
As the morning sun warms their wings, they begin to cascade downward.
Millions of monarch butterflies detach from the trees and take to the air in overwhelming swarms. A close view shows a mass exodus of monarchs from the branch of a fir tree, revealing the short green needles underneath. They fly about like leaves, blowing and scattering in the wind. In slow motion, a dense mass of the monarchs creates a giant golden swirl in the air amidst the towering green trees. Our view drifts closer, so only glimpses of trees and sky are visible beyond the swarm. As other monarchs fly elsewhere, golden sunlight shines brightly on their wings. In slow motion, others drift downward through the trees, like amber-colored confetti. The brightly orange monarchs blanket a sea of green treetops. Countless butterflies perch on lower tree branches, almost completely covering them.
To stay alive, they must rely on stored fat they accumulated last fall. But to turn fat into energy, they need water. Their mission, each day, is to search for a drink of water.
Among younger trees with more access to sunlight, the swarm appears to thin out. An overhead view of a vast green clearing shows a broad column of butterflies cutting through its center. Many more of them settle down on the lush stretch of sunlit grass. Using tubular facial appendages known as proboscises, they suck water from clear rivulets and puddles along the muddy ground. Lingering at their water source, they flutter about, their black and orange wings vibrant in the sunlight. White spots adorn the black edges of their wings, their antennae and proboscises sweeping gracefully outward from their heads.
They must maintain their strength for the exhausting flight from here to the southern U.S.
Now, countless monarchs flutter their wings near a mass of young sunlit trees. Many more linger on the grass.
From there, the children and grandchildren of these monarchs will journey on northward through the summer to Canada.
The butterflies begin to rise from the wet ground, a few at a time at first, then in a swarming mass. The swarm of monarchs leave their water source below, turning the field from orange to green again. Later, they gather among the trees again.
Their thirst quenched. The monarchs return to the trees by late afternoon.
The lush summertime trees appear to change from green to orange and brown.
By next autumn, their great-great-grandchildren will return to these same forests.
The resting monarchs completely cover the tree branches. The orange wings of several butterflies stand in sharp contrast against the green evergreen branches beneath their feet. Hundreds fly beneath the blue sky.
Soon they will set out on the longest migration of any butterfly on Earth. To reach a little-noticed weed half a continent away. Not all plant and animal relationships are so exotic.
Now, a vast field.
But even a familiar one, involving common food and well-known insect, is an example of hidden beauty. People raise this flowering plant, not for the flowers, but for what the flowers turn into. I live here, too. I'm a tomato flower, and I lock up my pollen tightly, so that only the most efficient pollinators can get it. My favorite is a very hard worker, the bumblebee, who gathers pollen for the egg-laying queen and the developing young.
In a hive, bumblebees tend to clusters of egg cells and pods. A white larva rears its head through an opening atop one of the cells.
Bumblebees are one of the few insects that care for their offspring. When damage occurs in the hive, a worker quickly repairs the cell.
A bee seals up the opening.
Honey made from flower nectar is kept in wax pots. The adults eat it and regurgitate it into the cells to feed the young. They need a lot of pollen and nectar, and searching for it is a constant chore.
A bumblebee exits the hive through a narrow hole in the ground. Now, an aerial view soars over a well-kept farm. A white farmhouse stands nestled among clusters of trees, near rows of crops, with low mountains in the distance. Beyond the farmhouse sits a low shed, and a storage tank stands sheltered by the surrounding trees.
They spot a garden nearby.
Next to the farmhouse, a woman in gardening attire kneels by a bed of flowers. She digs a hole, preparing to plant small bushes with pale yellow flowers. Further into the garden, orange flowers stand tall.
As the foragers investigate, they see things invisible to the human eye. Because they are able to perceive ultraviolet light, bees can detect markings produced by flowers to guide pollinators directly to nectar and pollen.
In a vibrant blue-tinted view, bees scout flowers with softly glowing pink and red petals. As the view turns normal, the flowers turn orange and the bees ascend.
The bees need more food than the garden can provide.
An aerial view races over a grassy hill, then dips toward large swaths of agricultural land covered with uniform rows of bright green plants.
Ahead, they see what they're looking for.
Bees sweep over the acres of crops as the view approaches plants set against pale yellowish sticks. A closer look reveals them to be tomato vines growing up along the pale wooden sticks. The bees slowly descend. Our view closes in, finding wires stretched between the sticks to offer extra support to the plants. Finally, a bee hovers near yellow star-shaped flowers at the top of a tomato plant. The bee gently prods one of the flowers, then lands on its center.
So begins a fascinating kind of pollination. The bee bites to hold on tight, then blasts the locked-up pollen loose by vibrating her flight muscles up to 440 times per second.
Minuscule grains of pollen pour out of the flower's central tube, landing on the bumblebee's limbs and abdomen.
She packs the pollen into baskets on her back legs. Her vibration rate is the same as the musical note A. She's like a living tuning fork, Few flowers are buzz-pollinated, but they include some favorite foods enjoyed by human beings. The workers will keep at this until they have enough pollen to feed the colony's newly developing brood. Such flower rewards sustain billions of creatures, sometimes in places where there is little else to eat.
A view of a bee fades to black. Now, rays of the setting sun cast shades of pink and gold into the sky. The fleeting glow of dusk casts the mountainous horizon in silhouette.
Weeks have passed in the Sonoran Desert.
A cluster of cacti stands tall beneath a dark blue sky.
My cactus flowers should have turned to fruit by now.
In the distance, a full moon shines brightly above rolling hills dotted with desert plants. Glistening waves lap against the rocky coast. Deep inside a cave, a bat with a round belly hangs upside down as she stirs awake.
The female bats are depending on it. They can't continue to nurse their young without a new source of food. The cacti may be their only hope.
Two bats take flight. Gradually, others follow them toward light, revealing the cave's exit. They swarm out of the cave's opening, ascending toward the starry sky.
From their island cave, they make a long night flight.
Leaving a small island, they fly over a vast body of water.
A round trip of more than 60 miles.
The bats arrive over the mainland and fly further in. They soar over sandy ground dotted with cacti and smaller desert plants. They reach a vast expanse of cacti, standing tall in the moonlit desert soil.
It's a demanding journey, but a feast awaits.
Egg-shaped fruits with prickly deep red skin and magenta flesh jut from the cacti trunks. In slow motion, a bat plunges her head into one of the fruits. Another bat arrives at a cactus fruit and feasts. The first bat withdraws with a chunk of fruit hanging from her mouth and flies off. Another bat tears a juicy, sticky bite from her fruit. Yet another feeds, this one holding her baby. Two more hover close by, seemingly waiting their turn. The feeding bat flies off with her baby.
The mothers need nourishment.
A very pregnant bat approaches a partially eaten fruit, her belly bulging.
And so do those carrying new life within.
In a cluster of cacti, a few bats move from stalk to stalk, sampling different fruits. A pregnant bat with a plump belly rises to a half-eaten fruit and feeds. In slow motion, she gracefully flaps her wings, her legs splayed out behind her.
As they gorge on the fruit, they are also consuming seeds, which they eventually spread across the desert.
Pulpy seeds drop from half-eaten fruit as a bat arrives to eat.
We cacti are key to Sonoran Desert life. But we couldn't endure without the help of bats. And the bats and their young couldn't survive without our help. This crucial connection between plants and animals helps keep the desert alive.
Elsewhere,
there are others who depend on the cactus fruit, collecting it at night so it can be consumed fresh each day.
Farmers wearing headlamps pick cactus fruit.
Their distant ancestors so adored cactus fruit that they honored the cacti as revered members of their tribes.
Daytime, a clock tower overlooks a clump of cacti. A herd of cows strolls past a roadside stall displaying the fruits in large baskets. A woman and teen boy sort the fruit.
Today, it's a way for people to provide for their families.
Two women work with knives while a baby sleeps in a crib next to them.
As well as a sweet pleasure.
A toddler bites into a cactus fruit.
so sweet that people plant cacti seeds in their gardens. From a flower's point of view, humans are just another species we can use for our purposes.
A young woman puts a pinch of fruit into her mouth. A little girl flashes a wide smile. A pretty young brunette takes a bite of fruit from a man's hand.
But a delicious reward in one place can be the cause of conflict in another.
A time-lapse view shows clouds drifting over a river in the wilderness.
Unlike the desert, a tropical rainforest is rich in resources and competition.
Little brown spiders close in on a butterfly caught in a web. A blue-headed hummingbird glances around.
Survival favors the bold and aggressive.
Strands of a spider web sharpen into focus. A large spider with a freckled abdomen looks down broodingly. A newly hatched insect rises up from still water, its body compressed in a tubular shape. It flexes its limbs, revealing itself to be a mosquito. Elsewhere, a tarantula spider crawls along a branch, its hairy legs bearing orange and black segments. Perched on separate branches, a green-headed hummingbird and a purple-headed one dart their slender tongues out in quick bursts.
Even the seemingly gentle turn out to be warriors.
A blue-headed hummingbird takes flight.
And nectar-bearing flowers are territory to defend.
A young green snake parts its jaws in a hiss, exposing its pale pink mouth. Hummingbirds of different colors gather around flowers.
The winners will spread pollen that helps keep the forest lush. One stakes his claim.
Four hummingbirds gather amidst jungle flowers.
And the challengers arrive. It's a standoff. Then, the first move.
The purple-headed hummingbird sneaks up to a brown one, sucking nectar from a flower. The brown one withdraws its beak, scattering pollen. The blue-headed hummingbird stares. The brown bird cuts off to the side, and the blue-headed bird moves in. The purple-headed bird dips its beak into a pink flower. As it feeds, the blue-headed hummingbird nips its head from above. The green-headed bird feeds from a flower, blissfully unaware of the purple-headed rival hovering overhead. The purple bird pecks the green one on the head, and they face off. The green one fiercely chases its attacker upward in a spiral pattern. The brown bird swoops into view, as does the blue-headed hummingbird. The blue-headed hummingbird swoops forward, now facing off with the green bird. Two green rivals face each other, flapping aggressively. The blue bird dives at the brown one, then goes after the purple-headed competitor. The different colored hummingbirds continue their dizzying tussle around a vibrant pink flower. The blue-headed bird darts past its opponent, straight into a spider's web.
Even a warrior can make a mistake.
The large spider crawls toward its potential prey. The hummingbird escapes from the sticky web just as the predator lunges. The blue-headed hummingbird returns to the pink flower.
The hidden spectacles of pollination can involve a few tiny rivals or hundreds of millions of voyagers.
The treetops of a vast evergreen forest fill our view.
From the high forests in Mexico, the great migration of monarch butterflies heads northward toward the middle of North America.
Now, a dirt road cuts through an expansive desert landscape. Elsewhere, a rectangular man-made pond reflects the cloudy sky. Monarch butterflies flutter over its glassy surface. The view travels beyond the pond to reveal a vast stretch of verdant farmland. Now, a two-lane road cuts through a charming rural town with vast swaths of farmland stretching in the distance.
In their long, round trip each summer, the vast monarch population will help pollinate and sustain more than 200 kinds of flowers.
On a patch of land, two storage silos stand tall amid a complex of low, white buildings. Butterflies flutter over the surrounding field.
As this first leg of the migration reaches farmland, the butterflies are tiring.
They descend to a grassy field dotted with bright orange flowers and delicate white blooms. One monarch lands on a cluster of orange flowers near another feeding butterfly.
It's a strenuous flight. They need fuel. That's where I come in. Milkweed flowers, in a variety of colors and shapes, serve as refueling stations in return for a little help spreading pollen.
A monarch unfurls its tubular proboscis and dips it into a milkweed flower, sucking its nectar.
We milkweeds are wily. Our flowers have narrow slits that can snag the leg of a feeding monarch and hold her in a vice-like grip. When she tries to jerk free, she snags a cord, releasing sacks of pollen she'll unknowingly carry to the next milkweed.
The monarch flies to another cluster of little pink blossoms. Already feeding, another butterfly opens its wings briefly. The newly arrived butterfly lands on the first, which hangs with its wings folded shut.
As they migrate, they also mate. This overwintering generation of monarchs may live 9 months. They're among the longest-lived butterflies on Earth. But now their days are numbered. They have to produce young to keep the migration going. Sometimes another male tries to intervene. Even in small love stories, victory goes to the most determined.
The dominant monarch carries the folded butterfly away. Several more pairs of butterflies carry out the ritual.
Eventually, the male sweeps her off her feet and carries her to the privacy of a tree branch. He may keep her in his embrace for up to 16 hours.
A male carries a female away from a cluster of tiny orange blooms crowning a green leafy stalk. A female monarch touches the lower surface of a milkweed leaf with the tip of her pollen-dusted abdomen.
Within 2 weeks, each female attaches up to 400 eggs to the underside of milkweed leaves, and only milkweed leaves. Unlike bees, monarchs rely not on the care of their young, but quantity. Enough eggs, and some are bound to survive the onslaught of hungry insects.
A red ladybug covers a tiny pale yellow egg with ridges running along its exterior. A caterpillar comes across a few eggs on a leaf. Over time, dark shapes move and pulsate within the eggs. The eggs harden and turn transparent as the embryos eventually mature. A pale larva pokes its shiny dark brown head from the egg. Later, it crawls out, revealing a pale body dotted with tiny black hairs.
The job of a monarch caterpillar is to eat relentlessly. First, its own egg case. Then, milkweed leaves exclusively, growing to 2,000 times its original size.
Now, a pale green mantis stands on a leaf.
If it survives.
The praying mantis cocks its triangular head as a mature monarch caterpillar crawls along leaves, its yellow body adorned with black stripes. Nearby, a black and brown spider climbs a stem, then jumps onto the caterpillar, snagging it. The caterpillar writhes, then goes still. The spider carries it off. Another spider catches a caterpillar that's sitting on a leaf's edge, then immediately eats its victim. The spider stares through glassy black eyes as it draws more of the caterpillar between its jaws.
Fortunately, hundreds of millions survive.
Feeding on leaves, more baby caterpillars mature, their skin growing from translucent to opaque as they develop their stripes.
Their mothers put them on milkweed for a reason. The toxic sap settles in their bodies. The monarchs are unaffected, but a predator who eats one is likely to become ill and soon learns to avoid them.
A caterpillar crawls up a milkweed branch, passing another clinging to the underside.
Eventually, each caterpillar finds a secure spot and spins silk to hold on to.
The clinging caterpillar wraps a section of the branch with a mass of fine silvery thread, then constructs a small bulb.
It's time to become a butterfly. The caterpillar grips the silk with its back legs and hangs upside down.
Hanging upside down from a delicate branch, a monarch caterpillar ripples the muscles along its body.
Through contractions, the skin is loosened.
The now dry skin on the caterpillar's back rips down the middle and starts to shrivel and molt upward, along with its legs and antennae.
Eventually, it splits, revealing a new casing beneath.
A green chrysalis emerges from the skin casing, which bunches up in a wrinkled bundle near the silk.
Now, a dangerous maneuver. In a matter of seconds, as the old skin and legs fall away, she must thrust hooks from the new case into the silk. If this delicate handoff fails, she will fall to the ground, helpless, and be eaten.
As the old skin casing falls away, the new chrysalis squirms around briefly as it secures itself to a mass of silk using a sturdy black protrusion. Now, the chrysalis hangs safe and still in a smooth green shell with a black horizontal seam running across the upper portion.
Within this protective shell, her caterpillar self is fading away.
The casing turns transparent, revealing a black shape inside.
Across the ages, humans have seen in this transformation the ultimate symbol of change.
The casing shrinks and dries, revealing a developing monarch butterfly nestled inside. The casing splits open down the middle, and the butterfly works to gradually push its head out. The split in the casing grows, allowing the newly formed butterfly to struggle its way out. Its abdomen drops at an angle, and its wings and legs unfurl. The butterfly repositions itself, its wings small and shriveled looking, but its legs long and capable. A close view of the monarch's undulating body reveals white stripes along its black abdomen, along with the stripes of its wings.
Her body begins to pump fluid that will inflate her wings.
The monarch opens and closes her wings, still wrinkled and pale orange.
The scales on the wings are shaped to reflect light, so that it produces a bright coloration. Contrasting orange and black are warning colors in nature. She still carries milkweed toxins, and these colors say, "I'm not good to eat." This strategy is so successful that some butterflies without poison copy the monarch's colors.
White dots adorn the monarch butterfly's jet black face. She flexes and curls her proboscis as she lingers on her chrysalis shell. With her wings still small and wavy looking, the monarch climbs the stem of the milkweed plant, leaving her chrysalis shell behind. Now monarchs take flight from a field of milkweed plants.
We milkweeds will provide the flight fuel as this first generation of summer continues the monarch's long migration. There is no rest for pollinators, not for butterflies, and not for one very hard worker.
Elsewhere, bumblebees cling to a tomato flower.
In a farm field, bumblebees are finishing the exhausting job of buzz pollinating. When they're loaded with pollen, it's time for the bees to return home and store it.
An overhead view shows a fluffy bumblebee rising away from a tomato flower. The view follows the bumblebee as it soars high above the tomato crops under a bright sunny sky. It flies to a nearby tree, boasting gnarled branches thick with dried leaves. The bumblebee descends past the upper branches. We follow the bumblebee as it swoops low over the roots of the tree. It enters a small hole in the ground nearby. Inside, fellow bumblebees busy themselves over waxy orange clusters of eggs and food pods.
The young are beginning to emerge.
Young bumblebees lie curled up in the egg cells, visible through small openings in their tops.
They'll need the colony's treasure of pollen and honey for nourishment.
a baby bee feeds on its egg casing.
But the colony's riches can also attract danger.
A skunk approaches the hive's opening.
A skunk will eat not only the pollen, but the bumblebees and their young. A threat to the colony is one of the few times these passive bees will use their stingers.
As the skunk thrusts its snout inside the hive, bumblebees fly out and move in on the predator. It swipes at the bees futilely, then hurries away. Back in the hive, a bee crawls over an egg cluster.
With safety restored, colony life goes on.
A shiny white bumblebee larva incubates within an egg, while a developed youngster feeds on its eggshell from within. It gradually emerges.
A young bee entering the world will live on pollen and honey in a home made of wax.
White hairs around its neck and shoulders dry into a snowy fluff.
All are gifts from flowers.
It finishes emerging from its shell and crawls over a mass of unhatched eggs, its wings small and flat against its back. Now, a mature bee lands on a tomato flower and clings to the tube at its center.
And within a tomato blossom, another kind of new life is beginning. This is how I reproduce.
A view moves in close to a tomato blossom to reveal a green bulb peeking from its central tube.
Pollen grains brought by bees from another tomato flower send tubes to the center of the blossom.
An animated simulation shows pale lines descending from pollen on the stigma,
delivering reproductive cells to the ovary.
The view travels down a stile dotted with delicate shoots,
forming seeds, each of which grew from one grain of pollen. Fertilization occurs. Gradually, a fleshy container forms around all of the seeds.
In the flower's place, a round green fruit ripens into a red tomato. A withered flower hangs near another green tomato.
Most people don't realize that what they eat is a yellow flower that turns into a tomato.
A time-lapse view shows unripe tomatoes on vines turning bright red. Now, a low sun casts a golden glow over the vast tomato crops. Now, a view moves in on a valley nestled among emerald green mountains. A woman carries a large bundle of harvested plants on her head, while a few others work in fields.
Around the world, people depend on farming for their sustenance, as they have for thousands of years. By growing their own food, people were able to develop civilizations and rise to dominance. Humans consider agriculture one of their great advances. But it was actually to our benefit.
Near rolling hills of dried grass, a woman picks ripe figs from a tree.
People now take care of us and spread our seeds. Who is in control of whom? Really?
A woman crouches over a patch of land with a basket of seeds, planting them at intervals into furrows being tilled by two companions.
Today, farming is a science.
In a massive sunlit greenhouse, a man stands on a small automated vehicle that carries him between rows of towering plants.
This is an immense high-tech greenhouse.
The plants bear yellow star-shaped flowers.
10 acres of tomatoes under one roof. I'm here as well, and the humans cater to my every need. People have engineered ways to grow tomatoes without even using soil.
A rising sun shines on a row of massive water tanks connected by pipes.
Nutrient-rich water recycles constantly. No pollution, no wasted water. This operation produces 1 in 6 of all the supermarket tomatoes in the United States.
In the greenhouse, ripening tomatoes hang in tight clusters.
Yet, despite many tries, humans have been unable to come up with a pollination method as effective as the one engineered by nature.
A bumblebee flies into the greenhouse through a hole in an artificial hive.
The entire operation and millions of dollars a year depend on ever-reliable bumblebees.
The bee soars through the sunny greenhouse, scouting the plants. It finds a tomato blossom in bloom and latches onto its center. Hanging belly up, it shakes tiny grains of pollen from the flower onto its hairy abdomen. Detaching itself, the bumblebee flies upward and continues its search. Our view rises to reveal dozens of rows of vines stretching out across the massive enclosure. Now, a worker snips a cluster of ripe tomatoes and puts them in a box.
An important food of humanity would not be grown and distributed worldwide, but for an ancient partnership between a bee and a flower.
On a paved path, workers drive long, narrow trailers stacked with crates of ripening tomatoes.
To me, all pollinators are important. But to people, one is more critical than any other.
A truck drives along a highway.
So critical that they carry them around as precious cargo. In many parts of the world, honeybees are so vital that hives are shipped thousands of miles from one kind of farm to another.
The truck passes stretches of farmland.
Travel can subject them to stress. Poor diets, new parasites, pesticides, and diseases.
Large white boxes house the hives in transport.
But many kinds of farms would fail without honeybees, such as this almond orchard in California.
The truck travels down a dirt road flanked by almond trees covered in delicate pale pink flowers. Later, the truck sits parked as workers in protective headgear collaborate to unfasten the hive boxes from the trailer bed. One worker uses a forklift to remove several stacks of hive boxes on wooden pallets. He gently lowers them to the ground. Still bearing many boxes, the truck pulls away. A view glides past rows of almond trees and stops in front of the hive boxes, now settled at the end of a row. A beekeeper lifts the lid off a box, then sprays the interior with a smoker.
Honeybees tend to harass an invader who opens their hive. But smoke has a calming effect.
Using a flat chisel-like blade, he loosens one of the many wooden frames packed inside. He pulls it out to reveal a comb teeming with bees. He turns the frame in his hand, inspecting its sides, which are partially coated with wax. Now, a close view shows a honeybee, its golden-yellow body marked with brown bands, flexing its jointed legs. It flaps its translucent wings and takes flight.
The champion of all pollinators is ready to go to work. Nearly 200 million bees reaching every flower in 1,700 acres of almond trees.
A honeybee visits a snowy white almond blossom, its abdomen quickly undulating. Another bee travels from one flower to another with pollen sacs on its legs. Other bees visit tall, slender branches of almond blossoms. Dozens more congregate outside the base of a hive box.
They return with loads of almond pollen packed on their hind legs.
In the hive, bees cover the comb cells.
The foragers share almond nectar with the other bees. This protein-rich pollen will feed their developing youngsters.
One of the comb's hexagonal cells contains a white glistening larva. A waxy covering seals off many other cells. A mature bee hatches from another cell. Others gather around as the hatchling crawls out. Two bees hungrily share a clear amber-hued drop of nectar. Now a bee lands at a hole cut at the base of the hive box.
A returning scout directs her companions to flowers she's discovered, using a complex way of communicating.
Inside, she walks in changing circular patterns.
As she walks and shakes her body in what's called a waggle dance, she indicates the distance to the flowers and the direction to take according to the angle of the sun.
Fellow bees gather around her, touching her wriggling body with their antennae. On a branch, honeybees in great numbers beat their wings and pulsate their bulbous abdomens as they bask in sunlight. On a sunny day, almond blossoms growing in clusters open their white petals. a bee attaches itself to the pollen-rich yellow anthers of an almond blossom.
Across Earth, pollination by honeybees is essential to more than 1,400 crops people depend on.
A series of bees pollinate a variety of flowers. One lands on a white blossom beside a red strawberry. Another crawls inside a cup-like yellow flower. A time-lapse view shows a green pod developing on a leafy plant. It takes the shape of a snap pea.
Without bees, none of these foods could exist.
Close to the soil, green raspberries swell to full size and turn a deep glossy pink. A lemon changes color from pale green to a deep golden yellow. Resting on the soil, a green baby strawberry gains size as a vibrant red hue permeates its surface. In a garden, sunflowers stand tall under a blue sky.
People forget that life begins with plants.
As our view drifts close to the large yellow blossoms, we find a bee working at one flower's brown center.
We not only provide shelter and medicine, but we're living solar collectors, the only life forms that can convert sunlight into stored energy, producing fuel and food and supporting the entire web of life.
Dozens of towering sunflowers wag their heads in a gentle breeze. Another field of sunflowers fills our view, fade to black. Now we drift back between rows of almond trees.
Weeks have passed in the orchard. Pollination has led to the growth of young almonds.
Pale green almond fruits grow in clusters on the orchard branches. Wearing protective headgear, the beekeeper brings his smoker to a hive box. He lifts off the cover, then pulls out one of the wooden comb frames.
But there is an ominous sign. Most of the honeybees in the hive have disappeared. In recent years, some honeybee populations have plummeted. The causes could range from diseases and parasites to a phenomenon in which hives seem normal, filled with honey and developing young, but the adult bees never return. Are the missing bees a warning of a greater collapse to come?
An aerial view approaches a large processing complex where two chimneys send out plumes of dense white smoke.
Some human activities threaten pollinators.
A plane sprays chemicals over a stretch of crops.
Farming practices can poison them and kill flowers such as milkweed. Wild areas needed by pollinators are often cleared.
A worker applies a chainsaw to the base of a tree until its broad trunk topples. Stumps of felled trees cover a vast rolling field.
Or they're covered by houses.
An aerial view shows a sprawling suburb. Another shows a freeway interchange.
Or roads. And across the earth, pollinators are diminishing.
Countless bees lie dying on the ground next to an artificial hive.
Every third bite humans take is dependent on pollinators.
A series of images shows the thriving tomato farm growing barren.
And if they continue to decline, life may reach a tipping point.
Tomatoes gradually disappear from display cartons. In the almond orchard, the white blossoms wither on their branches, and the verdant orchard ground turns a drab yellowish brown.
The pollination scheme that knits together the fabric of life could unravel.
In a produce display, fresh vegetables vanish in quick succession from their crates. Now, a palm tree stands outside a large building.
But there are solutions.
The view rises to reveal grassy mounds of earth on the roof. One boasts yellow flowers.
One of the most important is to restore lost flower habitats. Where human construction eliminates wildflowers, human ingenuity can replace them.
Orange flowers bloom at the base of another mound.
I can flourish, even on a rooftop.
Now, a man tends to a leafy plant with purple flowers.
The love stories of pollination can unfold in the millions of unused acres bordering the world's highways.
Four people tend to flowering plants growing by a freeway. Now, our view soars above green and yellow hills.
In the past, farmland left bare has been planted with grasses.
Greenish-yellow flowers cover a hillside.
But farmers increasingly turn it into wildflower fields to help pollinators.
Elsewhere, a woman picks a green vegetable from a vine, adding it to her basket of produce.
People can turn a backyard into a productive flower habitat.
Varieties of plants grow in raised wooden garden beds. Now, a bird's eye view shows a sprawling city. In a community garden within the city, plants grow in neatly organized plots. Adults and children add soil to a spiral-shaped flower bed.
Neighbors are planting vacant lots with flowers and teaching their children to grow their own vegetables.
A teen boy sets a small leafy plant down in a furrow in the soil, then gently covers the roots with dirt. An aerial view approaches San Francisco's misty coast. In the city, women and children tend to a rooftop garden.
Even a six-story building can support pollinators.
A woman shows a young plant to children before nestling it in the soil. She explains another plant to a toddler. Two little girls water cabbage plants.
Children who learn the value of pollination represent hope for the future.
In a patch of colorful mums, a bee crawls on a lemon-yellow blossom, then darts away.
The lawn of the past can become a yard filled with flowers and vegetables.
A grassy lawn transitions into a garden where plants thrive in wooden beds. Now, a little girl stands in a field of wild flowers picking a bouquet. Three young girls sport yellow blossoms in their hair.
Humans simply need to remember how intimately their lives are connected with and dependent upon flowers.
A time-lapse view shows a red rose opening its petals.
People use us to express love.
Pallbearers carry a casket adorned with flowers.
To honor loved ones.
A mourner lays a flower-laden leaf basket onto the surface of a river. Floral displays adorn a headstone at a cemetery.
To enrich the great emotional moments of their lives.
A bride tosses a bouquet to her guests, and an athlete in a wheelchair accepts a token of flowers.
They give flowers to congratulate.
A young girl in a gymnast leotard holds a bouquet as she waves to spectators.
To mark every milestone in life.
A beaming young woman pins a boutonniere to a man's tuxedo lapel. Elsewhere, orange flowers bloom.
They surround themselves with flowers to bring color to their lives.
A beaming silver-haired woman holds up colorful bouquets.
We flowers are grown and sold by the billions.
Tulip bulbs fill display bins. Women sell flowers at an open market.
In the process, people have become one of our most important pollinators.
An elderly man auctions flowers. A man in a field eats a carrot.
Like other pollinators, they feed on our rewards. And they even use our perfumes to kindle their own romance.
A woman sniffs a rose.
To people, flowers are the universal symbol of love. After all, we embody the ultimate love story. A love story that feeds the earth. Day after day, as flowers lift the human spirit, in hidden corners of the world, beyond the view of people, bees are helping plants produce the world's food. Hummingbirds are helping to spread tomorrow's flowers through the forest. Bats are dispersing life through the vast desert. And butterflies are making exhausting flights, including the monarchs, now setting out on a marathon journey of 2,000 miles back to Mexico. Everywhere, pollinators are working tirelessly to keep the vast machinery of life running.
A hummingbird twirls gracefully in air, mimicking the movement of a bee. A bat sucks nectar from a cactus flower. Two monarch butterflies flap their wings in unison. Perched atop a flower, a monarch butterfly spreads its wings fully, then closes them. Fade to black. As time-lapse views show flowers blooming, words appear. Plant us in a backyard or rooftop garden.
No one ever told me about the birds and the bees. And the first time that I walked outside and looked up at the trees, I saw the way the world was made. It knocked me on my knees. I fell in love.
Teach your children to plant and care for us.
I was scared when I met you, but after I knew you, I knew. Honeybee, I love you.
Go native. Help the bees by planting us in native varieties.
I don't know what I'm doing, but all of my wishes are coming true. I'm a hummingbird and I'll sing for you. La 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 la.
Plant us in a window box. Plant us alongside roadways. The land there is open to everyone.
La 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 la.
Go natural. Please avoid pesticides in your gardens.
Listen to the wind, my love. It plays just like an orchestra.
Bear some of it. Leave open spaces in your garden where pollinators can find a home.
Hold my hand with all your strength. I don't want you to fly away.
Bring back the monarchs. Plant milkweed.
I don't know what I'm feeling when all these feelings are new. Honeybee, I love you.
Join a neighborhood cooperative garden.
I don't know what I'm doing, but all of my wishes are coming true. I'm a hummingbird and I sing for you. La la la.
Go local. Support your organic farmers and beekeepers. The view drifts to black.
Thank you.
This film has been described by Deluxe, with funding by Walt Disney Studios. Voice by Jedediah Barton. Towering icy cliffs with peaks like pointed turrets sit in water beneath a night sky with an aurora above. Disney Nature.